Now, broadcasting on Star Worldwide Networks, it's time for the Fashion Rewired broadcast with Brian Hill. During the Fashion Rewired podcast, we chat with successful fashion designers and business entrepreneurs who share their powerful stories of success while providing real-time industry tips, tools, and actionable strategies to execute today, with the goal of designing our listeners' brands for success. Now, here's your host, Brian Hill.
Welcome to Fashion Rewired. I'm your host, Brian Hill, self-taught designer and executive director of Phoenix Fashion Week. So why is it important to rewire? Well, I believe that every successful fashion designer and entrepreneur at one time or another made the smart and necessary decision to rewire their brain, their attitude, but most importantly, their actions to get them to their current level of success. Each week, I get to share stories of transformation with our listeners while giving you the blueprint to rewire. I love to open each episode by thanking the sponsors that believe in Fashion Rewired. The Phoenix Fashion Week Freelance Program. While building Phoenix Fashion Week into an effective fashion industry resource, we have been asked time and time again to recommend the services of our teammates and associates. So the natural next step has been to organize a system and network of fashion professionals that we could vouch for in the marketplace. The Phoenix Fashion Week Freelance Program is open to anyone needing fashion design, hairstyling, sales representation, photography, graphic design, web design, marketing, social media, styling, makeup artists, accessory design, videography, modeling, PR, event planning, and consulting. For more information, please email freelance@phoenixfashionweek.com. My next guest hails from New York City, but was born and raised in New Zealand. But in Sydney, Australia is where she learned to blend her entrepreneurial spirit through communications, marketing, publishing, online retail, and new media. Lisa Smith graduated from the University of Auckland with a double major, earning her Bachelor of Arts in History and Bachelor of Commerce in Marketing. At only 25 years old, listen to this, Lisa launched all at one time a PR agency, an e-commerce fashion brand, and authored a coffee table book. Soon after selling that PR agency, she made the big move to the Big Apple, New York City, where her expertise led to plenty of agency consulting, which was the catalyst for her launching the PR Net, the leading global platform for key members of the marketing communications industry. Whoa, Lisa, that is a ton of stuff.
I feel exhausted listening to it, but it's all true.
That's your story. You're sticking to it.
Exactly. I know. And people are like, where's the University of Auckland? In fact, where's Auckland?
You want to tell us on the map where the University of Auckland is so people can look it up?
Sure. So it's basically, if you're looking at a globe, look right down the bottom, like as south as you can pretty much go in the world, and that's New Zealand. And Auckland's in the north part of the North Island, roughly.
There you go.
So it's the major city. I think there's about maybe like 1.8 million people living there now. The university's got a good rep. I mean, it did back in the day. I can't speak for now, but I'm sure it does. And very far away. But I think New Zealand's getting on the map with, their response to COVID and, their great prime minister that they had. So, if people don't know a lot about New Zealand, maybe they know, some of that trivia.
Gotcha. We're going to learn more about New Zealand and Australia and New York from you today. We've had a lot of success with guests on Fashion Rewired from Australia, which I think is a very fashion-forward part of the world. So why don't you give us one fun fashion fact about Lisa Smith?
Oh, wow. I think the funniest and most ironic part, like fashion fact about me, is that I am literally Marie Kondo with my closet. I think, especially, which we'll get to later, I've recently, moved temporarily to Sydney. I came with two suitcases for a family of four, so I live off maybe 10 items on rotation.
Oh,
I'm an extreme minimalist on the fashion front, despite having, had fashion clients in the past and, an e-com business where I sold fashion brands. So that's probably one weird fact.
I like it. So NPR, communications, e-commerce, lots of different things you've done in your short life. But tell me, what drives you today?
Oh, wow. I think I've always just had an innate sense of motivation, even, just growing up in New Zealand. I think from a teenager onwards, I always knew that I wanted to get out there in the world. Growing up in such a tiny place, I think you become very outward looking. And, I just wanted to travel as soon as I could. And, I was traveling from my teenage years onwards. And, And then as soon as I finished university, I moved to Australia. I was, you know, excited to move to Sydney, which was a much bigger city than Auckland. And then, you know, I got several years into having my business and being established in Australia. And I was like, right, okay, so it's time. You know, I'd always wanted to live in London or New York, so made that move. I don't know. It's just something ingrained. I think it's in people's DNA to, you know, just have that motivation level and that curiosity and that intent to kind of grow and evolve.
Right. It seems like it. It seems like to me that you wanting to always, like you said, look outward, right? Look at the rest of the world and then how you could conquer and grow there. But you obviously did a lot of studying, right? Double major and two great Bachelor of Arts degrees and commerce. So you were kind of preparing yourself on the educational side, but also letting that entrepreneurial spirit really grow. I'm interested to hear about your rewire, right? Was it when you went to Auckland? Was it when you left Auckland? Was it when you went to New York? When was your rewire? What happened?
I think my biggest rewire was really moving to the United States, leaving an established life and career, and then just, I really feel like it was starting from scratch. It wasn't to say that, you know, it was irrelevant what I'd done prior to that, but I felt like I was truly starting fresh when I moved to New York. You know, I had no contacts there. I think I had one friend that I'd met when I was in college. So it was a complete fresh start. And honestly, probably the most challenging thing that I've done today was just establishing myself again in a whole new city. And obviously it's not the easiest city in the world. You know, it's got its you know, fair share of challenges just even to live there and thrive there on a personal level. So that was really my biggest rewire, and it was starting a whole new life. So
wow,
that was really the biggest. Yeah,
that's huge.
It's still a work in progress.
That is huge. Well, I think when I remember moving a couple different times growing up in grade school and junior high, and when you go to a new school, it's kind of like a rewire, right? You're starting from scratch. Nobody knows how cool you were at the old school. They never knew if you're good at kickball or not. You've got to kind of start again, but you also get to take some things you did really well at the old school and bring them into this new school that you moved to as a kid. So I'm wondering, when you decided to make the move to New York City and you said, okay, I've got one friend, but I ran some great businesses in Sydney. Tell me, what was step one to establish yourself during this rewire for success? What was step one, do you think, in New York?
I would say, of the true rewiring, I would say letting go of my old life and my old country. Because I think I didn't truly start setting foundations in the US until I let go of my, until I, you know, came back to Australia, sold my businesses, wound all that up, and really started, you know, it was kind of my phase. Phase one was arriving in New York, and I still was remotely involved in running my companies in Australia. But then as soon as I, and it was actually advice from an Australian friend who'd been in New York for many years at that time. He said, until you let go of those things and consolidate in the country that you want to be in, it's not going to come together for you. So, you know, and with the time zone difference and everything, it was a much better lifestyle once I did.
But sure.
Yeah, so I think that was really the starting point for it was, you know, closing off old ties with Australia and really just embarking on new ones in the U.S. and doing consulting with U.S.-based companies. That was the starting point.
Right.
You know, and I didn't know what I wanted to do at all. I knew my general areas of interest, and this is always what I say to people, you know, if you know the general areas of passion and, you know, your capabilities, then, you know, you can just kind of follow those and you'll land in the right spot.
That leads me to step two. So truly letting go of the old, not that the old was bad, just truly letting go, right? So you can move on. There's
the old was wonderful. This is the thing, you know, the old was great. Like I had a great life set up here and, you know, excellent clients and I really enjoyed it, but just sometimes it's weird. You know, that's almost the moment when everything is set up that you do decide to shake things up again. Not everyone, maybe I'm one of the crazy ones, but I think sometimes when you feel, if you ever get to the point where you feel like everything's absolutely, you know, perfectly where it should be, I think that that's almost the moment when you do decide, okay, I'm now going to become complacent. It's too turnkey. I need the next challenge. So you keep raising the bar.
Right. Keep raising the bar. I love that. So then you let go, cut the ties, burn the bridges, all those little phrases, and now you're step two.
Mm-hmm.
You said you kind of said you're analyzing your passions. What do you think that was? Seeing where you were.
Yeah, step two was really trying to get more of a handle on the local market. So doing the consulting and being exposed to different brands and companies really gave me that knowledge of the local space. And just to see, because I still didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I didn't want to have another, you know, communications agency. That wasn't my aim, to come and replicate the same business that I had in Australia. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do something different. I just didn't know at that time what that was. And I was curious about, you know, online platforms, having had the e-com business, but I knew I didn't want to necessarily hold stock and have, you know, those overheads and that stress. So mm-hmm. I, you know, it was just very natural that I ended up doing something that was super related to PR, communications, marketing, but not necessarily working in it as a service provider of those.
Right.
So,
right.
And I'd always loved connecting people. That to me is like very rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
So putting the, all those elements together, you know, the idea for the PR Net was born, and it's just been kind of a pretty organic move into that. Not always easy, definitely not always easy, but certainly it's felt like an organic place for me to work in.
Right. So in step two, when you analyze the local market or the new industry you're in, that came from consulting, kind of got your feet wet, but also gave you kind of a map of what's going on in that market, in that space, in New York City and maybe U.S. So step three, you walk in. This idea, the catalyst was the idea for the PR Net, which we want to hear a little bit about what the PR Net is, please. But do you think that was step three? Like, sure. Okay, I think I want to connect people more so than run those companies. Is that correct?
Yeah. So while I was doing the consulting, I realized that, you know, people who work in communications, PR, marketing, we exist to, you know, connecting and leveraging partnerships and doing these collaborations. That was becoming much more a part of what we did. The PR industry was evolving from sort of a straight out media relations play to encompassing so many different elements. And I was like, there's so much potential if we could all, you know, gather together somehow or have a platform to share, you know, partnership opportunities. And then there were a lot of other things I also saw that were missing, you know, like an industry publication that felt modern and, you know, something that would relate to my peers and I.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to have a central, like an online information resource and kind of like a, almost like an online magazine that covered trends and information for, you know, the PR community. But also I wanted to have real live events where, you know, industry peers could gather and just, you know, talk to each other about what was happening in the industry, but also maybe things that they were working on where they were looking for partners. So that's how the event side of things started off. We launched PRNet, the website, with a networking breakfast
mm-hmm.
At a new hotel that had just opened at the time. And I think we had about 25 amazing people from different realms, from, you know, the Whitney Museum, Graff Diamonds, like all, such a spectrum of different people from, you know, various brands and companies. And there was just a beautiful vibe of, you know, collaboration. And the hotel was thrilled because it was a business development opportunity for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were really excited to have these different companies in the room. So
right.
That became something that spun off into a very regular thing we were doing every month, discovering new places that had opened and, you know, gathering members together to, you know, just network and hear about what each other was working on.
Right. I love that. So really what you did was you identified a gap in the market, right? You looked at what was missing.
Yep.
So after you, you know, talked to the people, work with the people in consulting in the U.S. and New York in particular, you saw some natural gaps. Like, I love that, because then you go back to all your training, all your experience, and it's very comfortable for you because you're passionate about it. And it's very easy to fill that gap. I'm not saying it was easy to work every day at the PR Net, but it was easy to go, this could be a concept, because it was missing.
Absolutely. And I think the great thing about New York City, and I can only speak to New York because I've only, of the U.S., only lived in New York, is that people really, you know, when you're passionate about something and you're on a kind of mission, I think other people around you sense that. And I think so there's such a collective sense of that in the city that they try to lift you up. People are great connectors, I've found in New York. So, I, you know, everything was built from referrals and word of mouth. So I was really lucky in that way. So, you know, certain doors opened that wouldn't have been open without, you know, some kind introductions from, you know, friends and industry colleagues.
Right. That says a lot about you, Lisa, that those referrals were so strong, honestly. But also, when you're trying to build something of that kind of quality and caliber, you had to have great people in the membership base, right? Because if you were just like out there, you know, buying lists and doing whatever people typically do to get customers and members, it would not be a really concentrated group of successful PR and communication marketing, you know, professionals. And then they would sniff that out and they'd be out right away. But instead, referrals started with you being such a great person in the space and in the industry. It was easy to kind of grow organically. What do you think about that?
I absolutely appreciate all the compliments. I don't know. I think people are pretty innately kind, and I think there just was a general interest and enjoyment of the you know, service that we had, and people just gathering together. I wasn't aware of anything else that was really happening at that time, even today, that, you know, gathers together that same group of people. And we were lucky to be able to also do that in beautiful spaces. You know, we've moved around most of the, you know, high-end hotels and members clubs and restaurants and other event spaces and cultural events. So, it was just a feel-good thing that I think people were happy to pass on to their friends.
That's good. That's good. Well, I mean, in these action steps of letting go, right, analyzing your new surroundings and just, you know, getting into the community, so to speak, and then identifying what's missing in the marketplace, it seems to me that when you do those kinds of actions, and then from that, the PR net is then launched. Tell me about some natural habits as you look back, Lisa, that you still execute today that came from the actions of launching PR net.
Yeah, I mean, I can speak to the natural, and I can speak to things that I've kind of had to force myself into, which has been a real blessing in the end. I think I'm almost better to speak to those. I know I was always fearful of public speaking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just had to kind of, it was like exposure therapy. I had to force myself into being comfortable with that, because as we started doing these events, I was called on to, you know, speak to people. I ended up doing some, you know, live interviewing of people at events. And now, you know, since COVID hit, I'm also a video broadcaster. So I have to be fine with speaking to camera, being live in front of hundreds of people,
right,
all these things that I would have just been so scared to do prior to doing that. And I also think just being bold and just, and, you know, not being afraid to approach somebody or put an idea out there. You know, I think there's just so much power in being bold and not, you know, what's there to lose? You know, I really have no ego around anything that I do, so I don't mind. I mean, I'm happy. Like, if there's rejection, I've also become fine with accepting that. I mean, that's, you know, also part and parcel of things. And I think in terms of things that I naturally did, I think like marketing, events, publicity, that's all very organic to me.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all things, you know, brand partnerships. Those are all things that I've done in the past in my, you know, PR agency life and career. And when we put together an event and we need brand sponsors, I know how to write a sponsorship pitch to a brand because I've been on the receiving end of those sponsorship pitches. And I also kind of have a bit of an understanding through that career experience. So that side of it has been pretty, I also understand, you know, maybe I don't get enough time to do more of it, but the value of publicity too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we from time to time have had articles written and interviews with me and things like that, that have been really beneficial. And I think too often brands look at, you know, do I see the immediate click-throughs or the ROI and the quantitative information? I think that's different than brand building. I think publicity is super important for brand building. And you know, so we, you know, that's been an innate thing to do, is to try to get exposure for us and build credibility for PRNet through third-party, you know, media outlets.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That makes sense. That makes sense. Those are some great natural habits. But I like the fact that you have kind of thrown yourself into the deep end and embraced public speaking. Because even when you and I, thank you for, again, back in October, inviting me to your Zoom, I really enjoyed it. I thought you were a great host. And it's funny, just in those few months, that you're doing more of this public speaking on Zoom. So bravo there. And just being bold. I mean, you're a very nice person. Sometimes you gotta be out there, you know? And that's cool that you're now a bold public speaking person. That is the new Lisa Smith.
I think a lot of people through COVID have been forced to be comfortable with speaking to camera and speaking in Zoom conferences and things that they, you know, previously might not have had to do. It's a different skill too. Video broadcasting versus live events.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both a challenge in themselves. But
right, right.
Yeah, I'm definitely more comfortable than I was, say, 5 years ago before I started.
Right, right. So within the not just the COVID time, but just since you launched PR, the PR Net, tell me about the biggest accomplishment that you can really tie to these habits and actions that you then adopted and executed since moving to New York. What's the biggest accomplishment? You can really attest to that.
I mean, there are a few things that pop to mind. I would say the network that I've built and the people I've met, and only just in as much as the how rewarding that's been for me as a person. I'm you know, an extrovert, a people person. So being able to get to know so many people in the industry, just, you know, who could be friends outside of it anyway a lot of the time, has been an amazing sort of byproduct of doing what I do. And then I would say a lot of the events that we've done, I'm very proud of them too, in the way that they've, you know, connected people and been a great experience for people. You know, when I get good feedback and or if I find it was helpful to people in some way, that's been very rewarding. Like if I looked at a video reel of the events that we've done in different cities and places, and that also makes me really proud that we were able to do that and just partner with, you know, companies like Louis Vuitton or Coach or mm-hmm. some of these big global brands. That's made me just very happy that we're able to achieve that.
Wow, that those are some great names to have in your marquee. So bravo for that. You will not believe this, Lisa. We're already at the halfway point of the podcast. I'm going to take you into the garment district after we thank our sponsors, which is rapid fire questions. You going to be ready for that?
Okay.
All right. Hang on. Fact. Each season, Phoenix Fashion Week turns away hundreds of emerging fashion designers that apply for the live designer bootcamp. This year, we created the 6-week-long digital designer bootcamp, where emerging fashion talent from around the world and from the comfort of their own home via mobile, laptop, or desktop will follow a structured curriculum online focused on the very important business side of their fashion brands. In a short 6 weeks, the fashion experts will teach, transform, and lay out the blueprint to build and run a successful fashion brand for 2021 and beyond. To apply, email digital@phoenixfashionweek.com. And we're back. Fashion Rewired, the podcast. I'm your host, Brian Hill. I'm on with Lisa Smith, all the way down in Sydney, Australia. She is the founder of the PR Net, learning a ton about communications and marketing. We also know where New Zealand is on the map now, so we're learning lots of things today. Lisa, you having a good time so far?
Yeah, it's good. You're very easy to chat with.
Right on, right on. So when we're doing the garment district, right, I want to try to identify the PR Net as either a wholesale play, which means you are communicating and dealing with corporations more, big boxes, big retailers, or is the PR Net direct to consumer, where you're trying to help and engage the individual communications expert? Which would you be, you think, wholesale or retail?
It's actually a mix. So we're mostly a B2B play, and that the majority of our members are from companies. So people register as members within their company. But then, you know, there are some examples of, you know, independent consultants or digital influencers or people who kind of are participating on behalf of themselves. But because it's an industry network, I would say it's more a B2B entity.
That's good to know. It's good to know.
When we do brand events, though, brand partner events, where, you know, I guess the end goal for the brand is consumer awareness, and perhaps our member demographic is their consumer target. So it's a little nuanced, but mostly I would say it's a trade thing. It's a B2B type entity.
Mainly B2B. Okay, cool. So I think I know the answer to this, but I want to hear from you. If you talk about a sales platform that helps the PR Net to succeed, obviously there's some fees. I'm assuming there's some fees that come along with this that these professionals have to invest to be a part of this platform. But what do you think the biggest or the best or the most effective sales platform that you guys use to help that happen, to close those sales or those memberships, Lisa?
In terms of software platforms or?
You know, I think software platforms or how you go about getting new members, I'm open to it all.
Yeah. Yeah, as most of it's been very much, as I said, like inbound interest in terms of referral, word of mouth. We actually have one of the fields on the application form when people apply to become a member is how did you hear about us? Mm-hmm. And I would say 90% of the time it's referred through a colleague or friend.
Wow.
So we do capture that info. I would say probably of the remaining 10%, social media is another huge way, obviously, that people hear about things these days. So,
right.
You know, and mostly for us, I would say Instagram. So of the small percent that's not referrals and word of mouth, the other part is mostly Instagram. And then we, you know, our newsletter, we have a weekly newsletter, which I think also has been a great marketing tool. And that's just a synopsis of all the content that we produce that week on the website. You know, it's recaps on our digital events that we do. So sometimes, you know, somebody might forward the newsletter onto a friend and they hear about us through that. But generally, yeah, word of mouth and referrals. We try to change that. I think the idea would be it can be bigger than that. But yeah, for now, referrals, word of mouth, social media, and newsletter.
Well, I go back to every time I've talked to a past guest that really leaned on word of mouth and referrals as their number one platform for leads and sale conversions, they're doing the best. Because I feel that it's such a concentrated group of people that then come on board to your platform, buy your designs, join your club, whatever it might be. It just seems that it's just very, very strong. And then obviously to have 10% maybe within the social media, and we can talk about IG after this, but I also like this newsletter, dude. We're going to go back to that newsletter in a sec, but I was talking to some designers just yesterday about you've got to get a newsletter. Even if it's simple, even if it's once a month, it simply says, I bought this fabric and I talked to this one person. And by the way, this person bought it. Those three things, if I was following a brand, I would love to know about. So for you to do a weekly newsletter, which I know it's a lot of work, but it keeps people in your industry, right? Communications, marketing, it keeps them up to speed, right?
Absolutely. I really believe newsletters are picking up steam and popularity. I just feel like people are looking for that, just that one informative, you know, email that comes through that keeps them up to date, or that just even if it's not an industry thing, if it's just a newsletter that's entertaining, I think that's a growing space. Mm-hmm. And our newsletter is very central to what we do. I feel like that's a big part of how we, you know, keep everybody engaged and in the loop.
Right, right. And so then to use Instagram as your number one social media platform, I'm sure you're on Facebook and Twitter, but let's talk about Instagram for a second. When you launched the social media Instagram handle, the PR Net, what did you want to accomplish? Did you say, I want to show pretty pictures of myself, of my kids, or I want to write quotes? How did you make that decision in the beginning?
Yeah, so the PR Net Instagram is super separate from me personally. The only time I think you would see me is if, you know, it's an article that I did somewhere and my photo pops up in that, or if it's, you know, a Zoom conference that we did, we often take a screenshot of the panelists. But outside of that, I keep my, you know, my kids are sort of, if you look at my personal handle, it pretty much just is my kids fooling around. Yeah, so I keep those separate. When we started out, it just felt like an obligatory thing that you had. You know, you had your Instagram, it was there. It's almost these days more relevant than your website homepage. You know, it's like where people kind of go to see who you are as a brand. So we started that a while ago. Honestly, I wouldn't say we were even seriously regularly posting or really tapping into the potential of it as a, you know, marketing and sales tool. I think, you know, probably in the last year and a half, we've become a bit more, you know, consistent with daily posts and being really, you know, and also using it as an added value for our members. So if you look at the content on there, a lot of times it is things that members have sent us. You know, maybe, you know, for example, Xenia just did their big show. They sent us assets. We posted on it through our channel. So sometimes you'll see, you know, different members of ours, their content, or we also keep people up to date with, you know, here are the new jobs that we've posted on our website, or here are, here's a great quote that came from one of our industry profiles. We interview a lot of successful, you know, company owners and and other identities. And yeah, so we'll pull quotes from them. We try to have as much unique content now as we can. But luckily, we're constantly producing different articles and features that we can pull from.
Wow. Okay. I like that. I like that. So then you're spending some time on social media between you doing these weekly newsletters and having these cool events on Zoom and then getting in front of the camera. Are you having time to follow other people that inspire you on social media? If so, who do you follow?
We follow all, so with PRNet, we follow all our members, obviously, or the vast majority, I'm sure, of them. Not people personally, usually, just more so the companies. So there's that. And then, you know, for me personally, there are a few, you know, I guess content creators that I really appreciate. I would say Athena Calderon from iSwoon is probably top of the list. I don't follow a lot of people, but I just think her, you know, sensibilities and her talent with design and, you know, in culinary and, you know, she's like a bit of a multi-hyphenate individual. So, yeah, I really appreciate her handle and, you know, the content that she makes. Just trying to think of other people, you know, people that are in our kind of wheelhouse as well, whether they're, you know, maybe it's editors or even sometimes it's people that have appeared in our events. We start following them. So it's a mishmash of different people. But yeah, I would say iSwoon, Athena Calderon is probably my favorite digital influencer at the moment.
Cool.
On a personal level.
I'm gonna check her out. And then we talked earlier about about the newsletter.
Beautiful homes.
Oh, really? Okay, okay. And because you're a minimalist, I'm sure you love her. the newsletter is probably the resource I want to talk about next, because I really want to talk to my designers about this particular episode and really get them fired up about the newsletter. Maybe you could send me a copy of your latest newsletter if you don't mind. I could use it as a guide. That'd be excellent. But tell me, in the newsletter, like, you're not trying to be salesy without even reading it. I know you're not doing that, but tell me what you're really trying
to do. Not
at
all.
Yeah. What are you really trying to do?
It's purely informative. So we have a mix of different things there. It's just what happened this week, you know, whether it's a profile on somebody, it's so we've really leaned into a lot of thought leadership and industry trends. And I think especially, you know, 2020 really called, you know, a lot of things into question, and people had to pivot and reinvent and adapt and all those things. So I think hearing from other respected industry people, you can learn a lot. There was just so much to be learned. So, you know, well, we have a lot of that kind of thought leadership stuff, industry trends. For example, I think our newsletter this week was how to win, you know, like your dream job or client and during a pandemic. So it's just things that are designed to be helpful to, you know, the end reader. We have a sense of who our readers and audience are, and just delivering them content that's going to be helpful. You know, we also have job listings in there. You know, we cover events. Obviously, there aren't so many live events happening anymore, but we used to extensively cover live events just to give people ideas, inspiration. It's just one email that kind of covers off what's going on in marketing communications at the moment. What happened this week? You know, maybe there's someone interesting that you can learn from in there. And yeah, that's really the MO for the newsletter, is just information and, I guess, inspiration and guidance.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Information, inspiration, and guidance. So I'm always cheating. I'm literally taking notes on every guest I have, and I try to implement everything I learned in this podcast myself. info, inspiration, guidance. That is, you just summed up a newsletter, a good one. So I'm a big reader. I don't know if you read or not, but I assume you do because you have two bachelor's degrees. So can you recommend two books for our listeners to read to succeed, Lisa?
Oh, wow. Surprisingly, I think it's having two children under five. I don't get a lot of downtime between working full-time and doing that. But, you know, one book that I read that a friend of mine, Karen Eldad, who's a coach, very successful coach, recommended to me is You Are a Badass. It's written by a woman called Jen Sincero, and it's just kind of like a humorous take on, you know, I guess it's like a personal development book, mm-hmm. but it's just some really good practical tips that you can take to kind of like empower yourself. And it's quite brilliantly written. I enjoyed reading it.
Got it. Well, I always look at the guide of a good book as if my producer, Robin, smiles. And she smiled when you said, "You are a badass." Because if you knew her, you would say, "Yes, that book is her."
I love it.
What's another good book that you'd recommend, even from your past, even when you were maybe in school, that got you really fired up?
Oh, man. I'm trying to think. There's been some recent. I've got a memory like a sieve these days. I swear, if you asked me what I did last week, I'd be struggling to tell you. I think I read a lot more articles these days than books.
Okay.
And that I'm just. I think I say to my husband every day, I love the New York Times. It's such a New Yorker thing to say, but I really, you know, I just value. That's like my daily. If I only read that, I kind of have a good sense of what's going on. Certainly in America,
but
more or less in the world. Like I. Sometimes I don't have the time necessarily to sit and read a whole, you know, get into a whole book, and I'd be quite distracted. I think it might be a couple paragraphs here and there at a time. But, you know, reading an article in the Times definitely keeps me, I feel like I'm relatively informed.
I can dig it. We're going to put the New York Times in there. I'm with you on that. So because you said earlier that you were driven naturally from a young age, we didn't really get to dive too deep into where it really came from. Maybe your family, your parents, but I love that you were driven as a kid. But I still want to take you back to a younger Lisa Smith, right? Pick an age when you're much, much younger.
Yep.
And then knowing everything you know now, what would you give advice-wise to young Lisa Smith to get you to the current level of success, but way faster?
I don't even know. I think it's hard to look at things with hindsight because you reach things as you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a way to accelerate it. It's like you kind of have to go through things to get the learnings. And I don't really even want to, I wouldn't even necessarily want to fast forward it. I feel like I've jam-packed a lot into my world. I don't know. I don't have any regrets about anything. I don't, even the timings, sometimes I wish I'd moved to New York when I was in my early 20s, but then, you know, I wouldn't have had the amazing experience of living in Sydney, which I really value. So,
right.
I think everything in its own good time.
Okay.
I'm grateful. I guess I always kept in mind things that other people told me, like travel the world while you're young. You know, it is, I've still been traveling since I had kids, but mm-hmm. It's more tricky, and it's to, you know, a different type of travel sometimes, or it's to a lesser extent. So,
right.
You know, I certainly feel like I, you know, maximized that travel experience, which I'm grateful for. But yeah, like what's that saying? What's meant for you won't go past you. Or, I probably paraphrased that, but I really believe in that. You know, you kind of just you find your right spot.
Right. Someone said the other day a great quote. You know, be where your feet are today. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. you launching three things at one time at 25 years old, obviously you had jam-packed a lot of things in your life already, but like you said, you had to do all those things to get to where you are now. And maybe not necessarily it's any advice to get there faster because you couldn't have done any more, right? But you probably tell that young Lisa that, hey, you're good right here. Just keep doing you, basically.
Yeah. It'll find you, you know, and you don't necessarily have to have all the answers at once.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes you feel like you've jumped off a cliff by, you know, upending your whole life and moving to the other side of the world, for example. But it has a way of working out.
Right.
And even the difficult lessons are still worth it.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of people are reflecting on that, having had, you know, tons of challenges through COVID. It's, you know, they look for areas of gratitude and learning, and, you know, that's how you make it all make sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously your big rewire was coming to the Big Apple, and you had mm-hmm. tremendous success from there. Tell our listeners one big reason why they should rewire.
I think you have to keep, as I said, like raising the bar and challenging. And if something's calling out to you, and I don't want to get too esoteric, but in your soul that you need to make a change, then I think you have to answer that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, rewiring sometimes, or oftentimes, is not a choice.
Right.
It's, you know, I realized had I just kept, you know, I plateaued with in terms of my personal growth and career growth in Australia, and you know, I could have just stayed on that path. But I think it would actually be, in the long run, harder and less fulfilling than, you know, shaking it all up and, you know, moving to the US in my case. But whatever the rewire is, I mean, maybe it's just changing careers and staying in the same place or whatever it might be, listening to some dream that you've had that you haven't pursued. It's not really a choice oftentimes. You just feel that you're not being true to yourself by not pursuing it.
Right. Keep raising your own bar. Love that. And if your soul is calling you, listen. Love that too. Those are two t-shirts I can make.
And you never have it all worked out, I think. That's the thing. Everything's always a learning curve. And once you feel like you do have everything all perfectly positioned, oftentimes that's the time you can't control life. There's a circumstance that comes in and disrupts it all. So you've got to enjoy the learning along the way.
Right. You do. And this pandemic has been a true testament of that. Everyone should be listening, should be rewiring. You have plenty of time to do that, but it's not too late, right? We're just starting 2021, and anyone listening can take a lot of what Lisa's saying today and just apply it tonight, tomorrow, next week. No problem. Lisa, to wrap up, tell us what you're excited about for 2021 at the PR Net or with you.
I'm excited about a lot of things. I think, you know, it's very constructed, the idea of a new year, because it's just really another day. But I really believe that it's a bit of a fresh slate, and you know, with the vaccine being a light at the end of the tunnel this year, and hopefully being able to, you know, get life back to more or less normal at some point in 2021, that is super exciting. So all the, you know, all the ramifications that has for career and life and just people's general happiness, I'm on a macro level, I'm really excited for that. But for us, being able to gather again in person, which we hope to be able to do by this summertime. Mm-hmm. Super excited about that. You know, we've got a few initiatives with the website and with PRNet that are launching this year. We're putting together the PRNet 100, which is going to be our edit of who we think are the 100 most influential people in lifestyle communications. Mm. So that's going to be exciting. And we're also launching a fantastic mentorship and career development program for students of color, and recent graduates. Mm-hmm. So we've assembled a really great group of mentors who will be kicking this off in, you know, Q1. So that's something coming up in the pipeline. And
that's very exciting.
Yeah, we're introduced. Yeah, that is really exciting. I think getting people when they're young and, you know, trying to start out in the career, sometimes the first big job or the first break, that's the hardest one, you know, getting your initial foot in the door. So I think having industry leaders, you know, really seasoned people that can help those young people get that foot in the door, and also even beyond then, like help them progress in their careers, is really, really important.
It is. Oh, that's exciting. I'm to make sure I get this out of the way. You're invited to the next Phoenix Fashion Week. We typically are every October. Obviously, things are on hold until we get this whole thing figured out with the pandemic, the vaccine, et cetera. I think you'd be amazing to attend Fashion Week, just chill out, hang out, and just kind of enjoy Arizona. And some of our PR people
we work
with. Yeah. And the PR people that we work with here would be great to just kind of intertwine with you. They're probably already members as I think about it now, but that would be fun. And you can put my name in the hat for that mentor program. If I fall into the category that makes sense, I'd like to put my hand in that. And maybe some of those young talents could work with some of our young designers. I mean, there might be some kind of synergies there. We can talk offline about that, but that could be fun.
For sure. Yeah, hopefully we can all travel again. Or maybe you'll be doing Phoenix Fashion Week virtually. Who knows?
Exactly.
There are options. But yeah.
Yeah. As always on Fashion Rewired, the podcast, you can upload a free blueprint of Lisa Smith's podcast today, right? You can follow her action steps 1, 2, 3, like she did from Auckland to Australia to New York, or be inspired by what Lisa's done in her journey. Simply go to Instagram at Fashion Rewired, send me a direct message, or when you see Lisa's post, say something cool about PR and communications, and then you can get the free blueprint. Lisa, thank you so much for today. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. It was really fun, and I appreciate it.
All right, Fashion Rewired, and we're out.
Thank you for joining us for our weekly 30-minute podcast focused on the business of fashion. Fashion Rewired is all about the successful transformation of your mind, perspective, and daily approach to your fashion brand. Make sure you listen next week for the Fashion Rewired podcast with Brian Hill.